The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back, everyone, and indeed, welcome to Trainer Talk Wednesday as we dive into the final furlong of the show, this final hour dedicated to bringing you Trainer Talk on Wednesday's afternoon, visiting with the top trainers from all over the country. Don't forget, tomorrow's format is a listener call-in show. You'll have your opportunity to call in from all over the country. And on Friday afternoon from 6 to 7, we will handicap all the big races, get you set for the great stakes racing action around the country this weekend. But without further ado, we get right to our first special guest here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. It is trainer Ken McPeak. He is nice enough to take some time to talk with us here today. And Kenny, once again, thanks for being here, my friend.
No problem.
Kenny, a 50-year-old native of Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, but Kenny, I know
Time out. Wait a second. No, I'm from Lexington.
I was going right down that road.
I was born in Fort Chaffee. I was there for 7 days. Okay? One reporter reported that 15, 20 years ago, and I've been an Arkansas native ever since.
If you can't tell,
lazy hogs and nothing like that. Okay?
If you can't tell, Kenny McPeak, he bleeds blue, no doubt about it.
Yeah. He's the opposite of Mark Toothaker.
So yeah. you were
a friend.
I knew you were an infant when you moved to Kentucky, but you were only 7 days old at that point.
Wait a second. My mother and father were both born in Lexington. My mom went down to visit my dad for a weekend in Arkansas, and then all of a sudden I'm from there. I love Arkansas in many ways. I've raced there for years and years and years. But that mess that I'm an Arkansas native is so far from wrong. But anyway, it is what it is. We can thank Tom for that one.
That's a great story. Good way to kick off Trainer Talk.
Yeah, a great way. Well, all right, Kenny, all right, take us through, how did you get into racing? A lot of people are wondering that. Tell us how you got involved with the sport, because it's kind of an untraditional type of story.
Well, after I was born in Arkansas, my grandmother had a home, or my family actually grew up on, or were on Versailles Road. And my grandmother in particular had a home, 1615 Versailles Road, that's directly in town from Keeneland. So when I was a boy, she cut a deal with me that if I would go to church on Sunday, that she would have ponies at the house after church. So we'd go to church, we'd come back, she'd feed us, and then I'd get to ride all afternoon. And so that's how it kind of started for me, being around horses. I used to wear an old chestnut quarter horse out. I'd ride him around the house till the guy was mad at me. And then my grandfather took me to the races when I was probably 8 at Keeneland. My grandfather was an executive with R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company in the 30s, 1930s and 40s, and he was transferred here, and then subsequently my mother was born and raised in Lexington. But I remember having to hold on to his tweed jacket when he would go to the betting window, and he'd get mad at me if I let go of his tweed jacket. And so that was the first time I ever went. And then, learned how to read a pedigree when I was a kid, and used to go to the races. I used to go to the broodmare sales and look at horses at the sales. I can give you a whole list of the times I went, but Keeneland's pretty much home.
And your dad was a horse owner too, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he?
He's owned horses and has a farm. He's certainly been an influence, and taught me how to read a pedigree to some extent, and kind of started training horses by accident. Didn't really anticipate doing it. I like to say I got a college degree, and that and 50 cents to get me a cup of coffee, but I did this because I was enjoying it, actually helping him out through a rough stage. And you can say he helped me, I helped him. Either way, ended up kind of continuing on, and in a nice base of clients today.
And you grow up in Lexington. You go to UK, and you get your degree from the University of Kentucky, as you mentioned. And then, if I'm not mistaken, you went to New York not to be in the horse racing game, but as a stockbroker. Is that right?
Well, between my junior and senior year at UK, I was seeing a girl who had gotten a job on Fifth Avenue. So I'd actually helped her move up there for a weekend. I thought it was going to be a weekend. I ended up staying all summer. And my degree today, I mean, when I graduated, it was a degree in business finance or finance. And I thought maybe I would pursue my degree. So I interviewed for jobs in Manhattan between my junior and senior years, and then subsequently came back to the University of Kentucky and finished my last year, and really have never used my degree other than keeping my own books, and I could obviously, business has been, it's been an advantage, taking advantage of, whatever business lessons were learned at UK. But it's been useful. I can't complain.
That's what I always tell people that asked me if I could give any advice to trainers is to pay attention to the business aspect. And I think that's one area where you've certainly excelled. I think a lot of trainers forget about the business end. We all get involved, with our horses every day, and it's easy to forget about the finances, but that's a very important aspect of training horses.
You've got to be able to do both. I think one of the advantages of training horses is we move. But whenever we've moved circuits, I've always bought small homes in those circuits as opposed to renting a home or renting an apartment. The comfort level's a lot higher, and you can also use them as tax write-offs. I've kind of taken advantage of that over the year and built some equity and property and flipped a few pieces of property. And anytime you invest in property, you can't go all wrong. But stock market hadn't been bad to me either. Whenever you win, you got to tuck it away and put it someplace where to grow. But those are lessons that, other people know how to be even better than me.
So, Kenny, what was your first job on the racetrack?
Well, when I graduated, I finished my last class one afternoon. This is kind of a funny story. And my roommates were waiting for me after I'd finished the last class with a cooler of beer and every other thing we could have fun with. And we ended up partying until about 4 a.m. And I remember sitting on the sofa with a good friend at the time and still friend, Ronnie Long. And I looked over at him and I said, wow, I got to get a job. And he says, well, what do you love? And I said, oh, that's easy. I love horse racing. I've always loved horse racing. And he looked at me and he said, well, good, do it. I'm going to bed. And I sit there and thought about it. And actually, those digital clocks, it said 4:05. And I sat there and I thought to myself, he's right. I went in my room, put on a pair of boots, an army jacket, and a ball cap, walked down and got in my car and drove to Keeneland and got a hot walking job.
Wow. Who'd you first start walking hots for?
I went to the track kitchen. I ran into a buddy of mine named Jim Cunningham, and he said, I asked him, I said, who are the best two trainers on the grounds? And he said, Lucas or Shug McGahee. So I walked up the hill to Lucas's barn and got the guy somewhat setting up. He said, horses won't be here for two more days. So I walked across the road and ran into Phil Hoswald. He was at the time Shug McGahee's assistant, and he hired me to hot walk.
What was it that you learned from Shug that you apply to your business today?
He really, he always, he's always kept a really clean shed row and organized. Phil himself taught me how to rake a shed row, taught me how to put on poultice, taught me how to throw back a stall. They used to make me hold for the blacksmith. I got bit and kicked a lot first week. I got through that though. I asked a lot of questions. I was kind of nosy to the point where they'd say, boy, you ask too many questions, go away. But and it's interesting, some of the people that were in that barn at that time and how, those relationships evolved. One of them writes for a little rag sheet that we read regularly. I'm not going to bring the name up. but anyway, so I started off down in there. I made $108 a week on average, and I really only worked for him for, I don't know if it was even 6 weeks. It was more of a you know, hey, just do anything we tell you to do, and I did, and I enjoyed it. I wasn't making any money. Chip pulled me in the office one day and asked me, he said, didn't you get your degree? And I said, yeah. And he said, can't you do anything else? And I said, yeah, I can do plenty of things. And he said, this is a really hard life, and you know, I would discourage you from doing this for a living. And I said, well, I'm enjoying it. I said, I don't mind. And I said, but the truth is that I'm not making enough money to even pay my rent or my car payment and gas between, actually, towards the end, I was driving between Lexington and Louisville every day. And, you know, I said, well, I'll go pursue my degree again or at least pursue a job that my degree trained me to do. And they told me to get some experience in sales. And I didn't care for that too much. I did a little insurance here or there. And then, 6 months after that, my dad called and said, listen, I've got these horses I need help taking care of. Can you help me for a couple of weeks? Well, that was 27 years ago.
It's been a great 27 years, though, hasn't it, Kenny? What a ride.
It has been. I've had, you know, the first 10 years were very, very difficult. You know, I really didn't make any money. It was just kind of making ends meet and learning some lessons. I had a lot of what I would average to add the slow horses. I got everybody's rejects. Whenever I got a good horse, they took it away from me. I learned then a lot of the lessons that I use today, and you know, you've got to try a little of this and that, and you've got to, you know, keep your mind open with horses. And I don't know. I mean, I think those lessons are more valuable. I mean, it was 10 years of experience probably before I came up with Tahana Run. And the truth is, I'd love to have him today because I think I could do an even better job with him, you know, just from the things I've learned. But I think that's a better way to learn, and as opposed to being an assistant for somebody that has really good horses. I think the top trainers, you look at them over history, I mean, guys that, you know, started down on the bottom and kind of gradually worked their way up and kept climbing, and I feel like I've approached it that way.
Yeah, Bobby Frankel was like that. He had a similar path to you, getting a hot walking job and working his way up, and one day he made a huge score on a parlay and decided to buy a saddle and a bridle and get somebody to give him a couple of horses. But, you know, I mean, that's, I agree with you. I think learning from the ground up is a great way to go. I mean, it's probably a little easier path to work for a fancy trainer and then pilfer a couple of clients off of them and go out on your own, you know, but the lessons, I mean, it's a hard, Shug was right. It's a hard life. And you're also correct. Unless you get really lucky, the first 10 years or so that you train is really a struggle because it's just up and down like a yo-yo. And when you're training those rejects, when you're training the even if you have a good outfit and you're the fifth or sixth string trainer, those horses aren't very fast.
Well, I think the things that I've learned looking at horses, especially the cheaper ones when I was claiming trainer, Ray Cottrell, I mean, I got a whole list of people that have given me opportunity. C.V. Collins gave me my first few pay horses. I had Ray Cottrell, who allowed me to claim at one point in as many as 40 or 50 a year. And then Roy Monroe let me buy my first group of yearling. And then, you know, I've had others over time that have, you know, kind of taken a chance on me. But those cheaper horses, you learn looking at them, and I always read a pedigree. Whenever I get a horse, no matter whether it's run for $5,000 or $500,000, I always read the pedigree and try to, you know, figure out who to buy, who they're out of, what kind of groomers are, what the female family looks like, what distances the family would be successful at, and then taking the confirmation and trying to put two together.
Kenny, you mentioned a short time ago Tejano Run, second in the 95 Kentucky Derby, and I know that's a race you would dearly love to win and came really close with him. Was he your first major horse, or was there somebody before him?
Oh yeah, he, no doubt. I still think he may be the best horse I ever had. I mean, he was physically a monster. I mean, I could hold him up in against anybody. He was a really, really big, strong, fast horse. Before him, I really know. I'd really never had a horse of any significance. I'd had some claimers that I had improved off people that had been some, you know, small stake stuff, and nothing that put me on what I would call a national spotlight. And I actually went from, at the time, about 25, had probably more than 25 head. I went from 25 to about 70 in 6 months. And that was a little overwhelming. And I had a pretty large learning curve on that one because I didn't have the systems set to manage it. And I had to kind of rearrange the way we operated. And over time, you know, we've improved that and gotten better at it.
Yeah, talk about that. You did take a little respite from training and then got back into the game. You mentioned reevaluating, kind of restructuring the way you did things. Talk about the new restructured plan and the new Chemic Peak stable.
Well, the time off was a little complicated, and in some ways I may have handled it incorrectly in that I didn't really tell the whole story. There were some things going on in my life on a personal level that, you know, that I was needing to deal with. Probably the most important was my mother was extremely ill. She had had a disease called, a form of multiple sclerosis called PPMS, and it was a very aggressive form. And she went from you know, normal everyday activity to falling down, and then within less than 6 months, she was completely unable to walk, and she lost her use of her arms and hands, and ultimately it took her life. And she had some things that needed to be sorted out, and we took care of those details, and I got to spend a lot of quality time with her during the time. That was a tough period for a personal reason. Professionally, I needed to step back long enough to handle her. And I also wasn't real with the setup. I had horses in really, in some ways, too many places, and I wasn't getting enough day rate. I didn't have the quality of assistance I wanted. I didn't have the quality of horses. I wasn't happy with the way it was set up. And so I called time out. You know, I just said, wait a second. I'm going to work as an agent for a period. I'm going to kind of regroup. I'm going to step back and clear my head. I'm going to take care of my mother. Take care of my marriage. I had to take care of me physically, and it took me about probably 6 to 8 months to really get back on my feet to the point where I felt like I was ready to go back to work. And my mother one day said, "Son, go back to work. I'll be okay." And we got her estate settled, and she subsequently passed away. But getting back on my feet with the horses was one of the biggest challenges I've ever had. It took me 30 starts before I won a race. Everybody thought I'd forgotten how to train in a year. And we were in the Breeders' Cup by fall. But anyway, it was okay.
So do you do things a bit differently now than you did before your self-imposed timeout?
Well, one of the things that I learned during the break was I got to travel to Australia, which I really enjoyed. And as most people know, I've traveled a lot to Brazil and Argentina, although I haven't done much of that lately because there's not, you know, we need to get the dollar strong enough to buy more there. But the Australian version of doing things, I think, is a little bit better than ours. And that's why I bought the farm, Magdalena Farm. I did that, you know, right before I made the comeback. And I knew that if I bought the farm, I was going to need to get back into it in the training side of it. Stronger than I'd ever done. And so there was a big motive there. But this farm is a huge, I'm sitting here now, and we have 63 stalls. I can walk through and check everything here this evening. We've got a group of friends, and we're going to grill out right next to the horses and go check business. And we've got a lot of the yearlings that I bought. We're able to break them. We're able to, you know, spell them or turn them out a little bit. I do that between races. We've got a grass gallop we can train over. You got a Euro sizer that I'm looking at that's 50 yards from me. I got a round pens, and so that approach is what I've taken on the comeback here. And you know, believe it or not, it's 6 years coming. That's 6 years ago. It seems like yesterday, but it's been a while already. And the place has thrived. And anybody ever wants to see it, we keep an open door policy. We love showing it off. It's a great place. It was formerly a stallion station or stud farm, and it's been, we had to refurbish it because it was abandoned when I got it. But I love those kind of challenges too. And you know, like anything, I love the game and whatever I can do to make it better for me and others.
You know, earlier you mentioned your family and your wife. Talk about your family and the support that they've given you through this decision to take a break and now moving forward in the new Kemmick Peak Stables, if you want to look at it like that.
Well, you had to bring it up, didn't you? you know, is that Sue and I are actually divorced. She's still one of my best friends. She's a wonderful woman, and that's complicated. And we have actually haven't discussed it publicly very much at all. I haven't. I kind of felt like it wasn't anybody's business, but I'll be straight with you. We've been officially divorced for a year and a half, but that's life, and a lot of people go through those things. But she's still a strong part of, you know, she helps, and we've got a daughter that we raised together, and she's still one of my biggest fans, although she didn't have to tolerate be gone all the time. anyway, so there you go. You opened a can of worms.
Yeah. Well, it's been an incredible ride for you over these past several years, Kenny, and I know just from talking to you and getting to know you that you're a great person and a really good human being, but an outstanding horse trainer as well. Look ahead to what we can expect from the McPeak stable here over the next coming months and years.
Well, we're still trying to increase the quality of the horses that we have in the system. I mean, I made a career in the beginning, or when I bought Kahana Run, the first good horse was out of the back of the yearling sale. I always used to work book six and book seven. I usually never even started sometimes until book five. And this year, you know, I was able to get a nice group of horses out of the summer sales. We worked the first four books of Keeneland in September. And so we're getting a kind of a better bred version of, better bred yearling, a more expensive yearling. And, you know, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. I don't know. Some say that I know how to buy $50,000 yearling better than anybody in the business, but I sure would like to spend $500 every now and then. those horses go to stud if you're right. I'd like to think, you know, like right now we actually have raised some nice horses here. We've got 15 brood mares. Out of the 15, 14 of them are stakes horses, stakes mares and black type, that are being bred to upper end stallions. So I'm kind of evolving into that side of it too. In the long run, I probably see myself training for another 10 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. I just turned 50, so, you know, I think 60 is a good number. And I've got some bills to pay in the meantime, which I work towards every day, whether it's training or, you know, as an agent. But I don't know. Actually, I'd like to one day race horses in England a little bit, or even train over there. I think that'd be fun. But I got to get the mortgages down here before I go do that.
Yeah, you got to buy a yard.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I've got, actually, this is what I got here. I've got a yard, and it's right. The same. It really isn't that much different. And the heath over there, they get to cut the grass. I don't have to deal with it.
Have you spent much time in England studying their operations and what it would take for you to head over there and train over there?
Well, having run in the King George in 2004 and ran second, so I got an idea of Newmarket and how it functions. And I took three over a couple of years ago, and we managed to have to get a two-thirds and a fifth with Noble Promise. I mean, a horse race is a horse race. I mean, you bring the fastest horse and you prepare him well, or her, then you got a chance. And I wasn't intimidated at all. In four starts in England, I've got a second and two-thirds, and that's not bad. And could have easily won those races with a little break here or there. But I like English racing. I think English racing is some of the best racing in the world. The purse structures probably could be better, but, you know, they could be better here too. The basis of the game came from Newmarket. I mean, that's where the rules were written. And so I find that interesting. I've always kind of thrived on reading about the history of the horses, whether it was racing history or even the breeding history. I find all that stuff fascinating. Some kids get into computers or basketball or hockey, although I did play a little basketball, but I've always found the horse and the horse business in general is fascinating.
Well, it's a tribute to you that you're willing to go over to Europe and take a shot. I think, you know, that's something that American trainers just don't do. And I personally love it. I loved it when you sent horses over there. I love it when Wesley Ward sends horses over there. I think it's really, not only is it a good ambassadorship for the United States, but it shows a matter of style and class. I think it really puts a different light on the type of person you are and how you're, you know, willing to expand your horizons across the pond and all over the place.
Well, it's fun. They're very accommodating. They help you take care of every detail. And so any horseman that ever wants to go, it's really not as difficult as it seems. They give you a set of instructions and you follow them. And first of all, you got to have a horse good enough to go, and you've got to have an owner of that horse willing to travel and have a good time. And for me, it's a no-brainer. If you've got a horse that'll be competitive and go. I'm looking forward to when I can get one that's ready to go back over again. I just haven't had one that's fit the bill lately.
Trainer Ken McPeak, he's been our special guest here on Trainer Talk tonight. Kenny, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know you have guests at the farm and you're going to go cook out, so I'll let you go do that. Thank you, as always, for being here, my friend. Great stuff, and I hope our listeners enjoyed a little behind-the-scenes look at Trainer Kenny McPeak.
All right, you all have a nice evening.
All right, you great too, stuff. Ken. Thanks, Kenny. Trainer Ken McPeak, ladies and gentlemen. Wayne Catalano is still ahead, but wow, good stuff from Kenny McPeak, huh?
Yeah.
Good stuff. I didn't know a lot of
glad he was
that early day
bet
stuff.
Bet you he was glad to get rid of us.
Once I brought up the family.
Yeah.
All right, Wayne Catalano is coming up next. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. Stay tuned. The second part of Trainer Talk still ahead here in the final furlong on HRRN Live.
You're listening to the final furlong on HRRN Live.
Hey, racing fans, don't miss your chance to check out Racing 101 from America's Best Racing. Racing 101 is a national tour visiting the country's leading racetracks to help introduce new fans to the sport and help enhance your experience at the track. Now you have the chance to learn fundamentals of the sport from the pros with one-on-one training and group seminars. Learn how to read the program, strategies for making wagers, what to look for in the paddock, how to manage your budgets, what to say at the betting window, and how to use the betting machines. And you'll have the chance to meet the stars of the sport up close with live interviews, autograph sessions, and photo opportunities. If you can't be there in person, log on to America's Best Racing at followhorseracing.com. That's followhorseracing.com.
RaceHorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RaceHorseReport.com. Make RaceHorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RaceHorseReport.com.
Introducing the Wizards Betting Window, a new wagering product available exclusively at DRF.com. The Wizards Betting Window takes the work out of wagering by giving you easy-to-use wagering recommendations for every race in the card at top tracks around the country. Both longtime horse players and racing newcomers can benefit from using the Betting Window, which suggests not only win-and-place bets, but also exotics including exactas, trifectas, daily doubles, and dime superfectas. And what really sets this product apart is the Betting Window Final Edition. Just download the Betting Window while you do your handicapping in advance, and then receive an update 30 to 60 minutes before the first race post time. You'll get all the latest scratches, current track and weather conditions, and late equipment changes. The Betting Window Final Edition will be delivered right to your inbox, so you can receive it anywhere. So use the Wizards' best wagering strategies to help maximize your returns. Visit drf.com/wizbw to try it today. That's drf.com/wizbw for the Wizards' Betting Window.
The road to the Breeders' Cup winds through Lexington for Keeneland's Fall Stars Weekend. This weekend, October 5th, 6th, and 7th, our award-winning broadcast team will bring you over 6 hours of coverage, along with 7 win and you're in Breeders' Cup Challenge races. Live from Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of times and races, or to listen live online. It's Keeneland's Fall Stars Weekend, only on HRRN. It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the final furlong on HRRN Live.
Welcome back to HRRN's Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Today is Trainer Talk Wednesday, visiting with trainers from across the country. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Delapina, back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Had a great conversation with trainer Ken McPeak moments ago, and now turning our attention to another outstanding trainer. That's trainer Wayne Catalano, who's nice enough to join us for the second half of the show here this afternoon. Wayne, thanks for being here, my friend.
It's my pleasure, Mike and Lee. How y'all doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good, good. Hey, well, listen, well, let's start with taking us back and talking to us about how you got into horse racing, because it's an interesting story, kind of an untraditional route to becoming a trainer. But first of all, I'll start with talking about how you got involved in the sport.
Well, I wasn't doing real good in school. I didn't care for it. I was, you know, 15 years old, wanted to get out. And my uncle talked to my mother, said, why don't you take him to the track and be a jockey? Because me and my brother were small, and, you know, so that's what he suggested. We go to track and be jockeys. So we went on. I'm going to the racetrack and end up joining Jack Bamberg and taking up a trade and learning how to be a jockey. And on the way, Bamberg, of course, being one of the greatest trainers to live, taught us horsemanship, which led me to be a jockey and now I'm the trainer.
And you were born in New Orleans, so when you were a teenager, were you still in Louisiana?
Yeah, I was born and raised in New Orleans. And I was a teenager, 15 years old in New Orleans, and when I ended up going to the racetrack to become a jockey.
Which track was that? Do you remember?
At Fairgrounds. Yeah, it was the Fairgrounds in New Orleans.
Yep.
Well, you
it was like 41 years ago.
You had a tremendous career as a jockey. A lot of people don't know that. I actually won a bet one time because a guy didn't know you were a rider. And yeah. Tell us about your riding career. You were a kingpin at some of the spots you rode in.
Yeah, we was very fortunate to come up underneath Jack Bamberg, and you know, he taught me everything I know about horses. And I became a jockey and was riding for Jack. Rode my first winner May 20th, 1974 at Churchill Downs on a horse called Hellfire for Jack. And went on to ride races in New Orleans and ended up in Michigan riding at the Hazel Park and DRC. We had a lot of success there. You know, of course, when you ride for a powerhouse like Jack Bamberg, you know, you get a pretty good jump start. So we went on and won a lot of races. We broke Steve Carlton's record. We broke Snyder's record. We went over 1,700 races as a jockey.
Yeah, went over 1,700, nearly 1,800. I think was the total like 1,792, Wayne? Is that right?
That's correct. That's
yeah.
The total.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short. It was almost, say, almost 1,800. It sounds better.
Well, that's what I tell everybody when they say, oh, you won two Breeders' Cup. I said, oh, no, I won three.
Shot on that one. That's right. Get your facts straight.
Yeah, really. They're hard to get.
That's right. Well, I remember one Breeders' Cup for that you won. You told me about 2 or 3 days before the race that She Be Wild was going to win. We were standing outside Embassy Suites in Arcadia, and I said something about She Be Wild, and you said, don't worry about it. She's going to win. And, I've had a few trainers tell me they were going to win that didn't win, but I've had another couple that told me they were going to win and they did win, but you're on a very short list. There's only three guys that told me they were going to win the Breeders' Cup and went out and won it, and you're one of those three.
Oh, well, she was doing very well at the time. We were very high on her. She was training very well. She had the prep race at Keeneland going into there, and I thought, you know, everything that happened, you know, in the prep race and how I thought she probably should have won that race, but the track bias and the way she was ridden kind of hampered her. So I said, well, you know what? That's okay. That just set us up to win the Breeders' Cup. And it did.
Yeah, she was a very special horse. And another special horse that you won with was Dreaming of Anna. Talk about her and how great she really was.
Well, Dreaming of Anna was probably one of the best horses I've trained. She won the Breeders' Cup, and she won the races afterwards. She won the Breeders' Cup. She was my first Breeders' Cup winner, so obviously, she's very special, but she was also a very talented horse. You know, she went on to win races, and you know, after that, and I think I earned maybe $2 million. Very good horse. We had a lot of fun with him.
Yeah, she was very versatile. She could run short, long, dirt, turf. She could do everything.
Well, she was pretty good at it. She, you know, she pulled it off when we won the Breeders' Cup. It was on the dirt, and she was really a grass horse, and they thought we was crazy, like not getting the prep on the dirt and going in, so...
Talking with trainer Wayne Catalano here on Trainer Talk on the final furlong of the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wayne, do you find, now you're based pretty much in the Midwest, do you find that sometimes you're kind of fighting for respect with some of the other bigger operations, even though you've had so much success throughout your career as a trainer?
Fighting for respect where?
In terms of, you know, you mentioned Dreaming of Anna. You say, well, they thought we were crazy to run Dreaming of Anna the way we did, and She Be Wild, how special she was, and you knew she was going to be really good. But do you think that maybe sometimes people overlook you a little bit because you do train in the Midwest and you're not, you know, the Todd Pletcher, Steve Asmussen's of the world?
No. I'll put myself right up with them. I don't have no problem with that. Everybody knows that. I don't sell myself short nowhere. We've been very fortunate. We had a lot of good owners give us horses, and anywhere we go, we won big races. So, I mean, people know that. I don't see, you know, because you're not in California, in New York, it's even more special because you don't have them horses so easy around you. So it makes it a lot tougher not being around good horses when you're out in them areas. You're probably subject to get better horses, but... we somehow seem to get them and do it.
Yeah, it seems like every year you're loaded throughout the entire year. This year, no exception. How do you do it? How do you continually reload and keep getting good horses?
Well, once again, you know, we have very special owners. And, you know, these people supply these horses to you. They put their faith and put their horse and everything into it, into you. And they respect and trust you and give you these horses. So that makes me thrive and do it, you know, to prove that, you know, they were right giving me these horses. And we go out. We got a good team. I mean, we got some very good people behind us. Otherwise, we couldn't do the job that we do. So I'm very fortunate in that respect also.
Tell us a little bit about your training philosophy and how you go about things on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, once again, we'll talk about Jack Vanbrugh. He was the greatest trainer of all time in my eyes, and I believe in a lot of other people's eyes. He was the first trainer to go 6,000 wins and all these North American training titles. He taught me horsemanship, and when you know horsemanship and people give you the horses, it's you got good help behind you, and it makes it a lot easier to do.
Well, he's had a great string of success with trainers as a teacher. You know, Billy Mott comes to mind, and you come to mind. I'm sure there's several others that I can't
think. Frankie Brothers,
yeah.
Billy Mott and myself, and there's been a few along the way other than us three, but those are the three I remember, along with Telly. You know, he's had a lot of them, you know, to mention. That's a few to mention. I hope I didn't miss anybody that was, you know, very good. I need Jack Vanbrugh. There was a lot of awesome in him.
And when you talk about...
Those are the ones in my era I came up with, those three guys. Mark Wallerstedt, those are the guys I was training underneath the shed row with Jack.
And you talk about Jack's influence on your career, influence on a lot of people's career, especially teaching you how to be a horseman. What are some of the things in particular that he taught you that you still apply to your training methods today?
Well, he said hard work. The harder you work, the luckier you get. So he taught us work. You know, we were one of the trainers 7 days a week. We'll go to the barn every day. You know, we're there every day doing, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, day in and day out, 7 days a week is, you know, running a lot of horses. And it's not an easy job. And to stay up on that pattern right there is pretty hard to do.
Yeah, he's one of the first guys to the barn in the morning, one of the last guys to leave. You'll often see him in the afternoon holding the horse for the blacksmith and giving the blacksmith hell about taking a quarter of an inch here off a heel or doing this or doing that.
I hate to interrupt you, but he would take the apron off and put it on them, get the knife in the hand, and when he see blood, then he knew he was done. He said, okay, that's how you do it. He wouldn't stop till he drew a little blood on him when he was doing that blacksmith.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. I was on the racetrack committee with him at Santa Anita when I was a trainer, and he knew more about tractors and taking care of a racetrack than any track man in the country, in my opinion. He was so smart about all of those things that had to do with racing. I mean, he could go out there and he would sometimes get in the tractor and drive the track man around and show him too high here, too low there. I mean, he just has a mind for everything involved with racing.
Mr. Vanbury would do that. You know, when he had that farm in Kentucky, he'd be out there working on it. What are you doing, Jack? He's I'm out on the tractor.
Yeah.
He's out on the tractor. He's not grading this track right now. This is what I'm doing. And he's always working. He was a workaholic. And he still is. He still tries to get on that pony and work. He's a worker.
Wayne,
thinking about it.
Outside of Jack Bamberg, who else played a major role in helping you throughout your career?
Well, I have to say my wife. We've been married 33 years, and for her, she was my first assistant, and she was the prettiest one also. So my wife, I have to say, she was behind me all the way. Without my wife and helping me get started and being there for me and, backing me all the way. I mean, she was unbelievable, and she still is today.
Yeah, it's funny. So, I've often said that about what we've done here on the network and the early days of building it and my wife sticking by my side. It's just incredible. And talk about how much support that she's shown you and how valuable she's really been.
Well, when you're away from me, now that we're traveling around, we're home like 4 months, 5 months maybe max, and the rest of the time we're on the road. And we have a little farm back in Elgin, Illinois, so she stays back to take care of the farm and the horses. And she comes every once in a while to the big races. She'll fly to the Breeders' Cup, and she'll come to Cleveland, and she'll come to a couple of racetracks. And in the wintertime, Florida, she'll come 3 or 4 or 5 days or whatever. But most of the other time, I'm away from home, and it's not easy.
How did she handle the transition of you being a rider and then switching over to training?
Well, it kind of was smooth, we were still with the horses, we were still at the track, and it was a lot better when I became a trainer. She was at the barn before we had my daughter Shelby, who is now 21, so now she don't have all that right now. The nest is kind of empty, but she would be at the barn. Like I said, she was my assistant when we first got started. Me and her did all the work. She was grooming horses, and I was galloping horses and training them, and I'd have to get done and try to get out of there. I'd have to help her finish grooming because she would like be there all day if I let her. Well, I remember wrecking the shed road and cleaning her feed up just to finish up so we can get the heck out of there.
There you go. Everybody's got to pitch in.
Yeah.
Did she
started our little mom and pop operation there.
Did she have a racing background as well, Wayne?
No. She did not. She did actually, coming up with me for, 40 years. But she come on the track. I met her on the track. Brothers were working at the track, and she came to the track in Michigan when I met her. Both her brothers were working for me, and assistant training and shed row foremans and stuff. Along the way, of course, they were grooming hot walkers and everything, and then they become my assistants, and, off and on. So she's been background through me all that time. But before that, no.
Wayne, you mentioned earlier some of your owners and how important it is to have those good owners to get the good horses each and every year. Talk about some of the owners that you have involved that have been so good to you over the years.
Well, I have a lot of good ones, and to mention them all would be hard. But I started out way back when Darryl and Evelyn Yates was longtime clients of mine, and they stuck through it with me through everything, splitting off with him in private training for Calabrese and all. They were there for me before, and they were there for me after. We won the Arkansas Derby and the Louisiana Derby, and, they took me to the Kentucky Derby with Crypto Star. I had a chance to sell the horse and move on, and no, we're not going to do that. We let Wayne take us to the big dance. And so, we went to the Kentucky Derby with Crypto Star. We won those races with him. So it was kind of my first, big horse through them years. And, I was fortunate enough when Jack Bamberg get me on John Franks, who I had my first stakes with his croupier lady. You know, you can just talk on. And then, you know, hooking up with Calabrese and having a 10-year span on breaking records and winning titles and, you know, winning the Breeders' Cup and all these things. I mean, you just on, these owners and clients, and now become friends. And the Malone, you know, CB Wild owners, you know, Nancy Malone and his husband is like unbelievable people. And then you get the Ramses now here, and we win the Breeders' Cup with Stephanie's Kitten, you know, and all the ones, you know, the ones that we have now and along the way, and, you know, the Peachtrees and all those people now. It's just incredible run we had. You know, there's so many to mention, and, you know, to get them all, remember them right off the top of my head. I don't have a script with me, so. There you go.
All right.
Well done.
Do you spend a lot of time looking for horses at sales, or do you go around farms and look for them? How do you acquire new horses?
Well, I don't, you know, I got, you know, Mr. Gary and Mary West, you know, they go to the sales, they buy the horses. Benny Glass has, you know, been a big part of it, sending me those horses, these people who I depend on, who go to the sales and buy these horses and, you know, send them to me to train. This, you know, been big, you know. I don't really do a lot of that. I go there and, you know, see them people, and they do a wonderful job. And, you know, we're very fortunate to be training from Gary and Mary West now in the operation that we have. And, you know, the future looks very bright. They bought a lot of horses at the sales. And, you know, they have those kind of people behind you. You know, it's unbelievable. Very wonderful, and we're very grateful to have these kind of people behind us.
Talking with trainer Wayne Catalano here on HRRN's Trainer Talk Edition of the Final Furlong. Wayne, in terms of the horses, obviously your three Breeders' Cup winners have a very special place in your heart, but in terms of the other horses that you had the chance to be around and be part of their careers, who else is really special to you?
Well, we have a little filly that we bred in our backyard. She was a 2-year-old Illinois champion last year. She won the Eclipse of Illinois over there. And Class Break, who we had in my daughter's name, she was like 4 or 5 wins. She won a couple of stakes, and she was, you know, a 2-year-old champion. And we raised her in the backyard. And that was very special. That was just recently, you know, last year. So she's been very special to us. And, you know, we have a handful of horses, that one that we raise, which everybody knows is not easy to do, you know, when you win with a homebred. It's very gratifying, and we're very fortunate to have that happen for us. So she's one of the special ones.
Yeah, that's always cool when you have a homebred win. And of course, you being so involved in breeding it, training it, probably fold it, or your wife fold it too, right?
we only have a couple of brood mares, and, you know, we've been very fortunate over the years. We had a whole handful of horses or more that won, that we raised, and it was great. And then she was 2-year-old champion last year, so wow, that was good. That was real good. And then Uncle Wayne, he went in a little allowance race the other day. We thought he was a nice horse, and he was, and he got hurt, but when him winning the other day, and they called my nephews and that, called me Uncle Wayne, so we named the horse. And he won a big race for us the other day. It was a lounge race, but it was a big race for us. And coming off a 2-year-old bench, you know, he won the other day. And another one called Star of Class, who was Crypto Star. It was a full brother to Jose Aden, who we had with Mr. Yates and this horse here. So he was special, too. He's the last of the Crypto Stars.
Yeah, that's great, Wayne. So many people, I think, that aren't around the game and aren't aware, they just see, you know, you on the big stage with the Breeders' Cup winners and all the big stakes winners, and they don't realize what goes into this sport behind the scenes. You know, talking about your homebreds and the horses that maybe were lesser known but are equally as special, maybe even more so. So much of that in this game that people don't even know about.
Yeah, there's a lot of ups and downs. You know, it's great when you get them ups because they're far and few in between, but at least you get to appreciate them, and you look back and you say, you know what, this is what we got up every day for. These are the things we do it for, you know. Otherwise, why would you do it? And it's unbelievable, right? You know, and raise them in the backyard and seeing the mares and babies run around. And And to see him win is like, you know, wow, this is nice. It's very hard to do. I know I see people with, you know, so many well-bred horses and so many mares and, you know, so few winners. It's like, you know, we had so many winners out of that little two-hog band of freedom that we had. So I know how special it is, and we appreciate it.
Is there a horse, Wayne, that you would say, man, I wish I could have this one back? If there was one that maybe got away that you said, boy, I'd like another crack with that one. Is there a horse out there like that?
Actually, probably no. I don't know. I don't know if I would say I wish I had another crack at it. We've been pretty fortunate to get what we can get out of the horses before they moved on. You know, we had a horse, of course. I don't know if you're trying to lead to this one or not, but horse that won the Kentucky Derby, I had the horse training to meet my, had him in my barn, had him in stall one, barn 16, Animal Kingdom. We brought him on to the Kentucky Derby and wound up winning it. I wasn't fortunate enough to hold on to him. Mr. Irwin put all his horses in one barn, and we knew what kind of horse he was. We gave this guy a heads up that, you know what, this is your Derby horse. No, this is a grass horse. No, sir, this is your Derby horse. I gave Robbie Alvarado a leg up on this horse. I said, you know what, Robbie, you know, do this with him, do that with him. This might be my Derby horse. When Robbie got off of him after he won, he said, no, this is your Derby horse. So, I mean, we did our job. I mean, if you look and see how he came up, he come up, he was a big baby Huey when we got him, and we spent a lot of time, not to count a lot of money, training the horse. But we was very satisfied with the job that we done and what we send him off to be from when he come from the big baby Huey to the winner's circle and then driving to be the monster that he was. So we was like a very big part of that horse, so I felt good about that.
Yeah, what was that moment like when he crossed the finish line at Churchill Downs? He wins the Kentucky Derby. Had to be somewhat bittersweet, but I know you had to take a lot of pride in that as well.
You know what? You know what? To be honest with you, my wife and I were sitting there, of course, we all there watching, you know, and I had no emotion toward it, no other way than, you know, we knew that. We've done that. You know, if you look at his record and you see what he's done, and you can ask anybody that was involved with the horse, they know. So I felt good about it. You know, I was great. I mean, we did our job. The horse ran maybe twice and went to the Derby. How'd he get there? Come on. Everybody knows. You can just look at it and see.
Yep.
Grand Motion done a great job. Obviously, you know, to win the Derby with him, but he went on and he went over that way like unbelievable horse. He was a full-grown man from a big baby Huey, spinning and dropping the gallop boy and not wanting to train and putting blinkers on him and galloping with company and, you know, spending 120 days with the horse, getting him ready to go to the races. And, you know, those things I know. And also the people who know horses and know what it takes to get there, they know. The owner who had the horse, they know. Everybody knows. So in my crew, we knew. We didn't... Hey, we had him stall one, barn 16. We had the Derby winner there. We just wasn't fortunate enough to push it all the way through, but everybody did their job.
I hope you cashed a nice bet on him.
He liked the horse. I mean, believe me, this horse was a good horse going in. He wasn't surprising me at all. I mean, he run him once. I think he was second in an allowance race, and he run him back at third where he win in that race, and then he went to the Derby. So there's your races.
Well, Wayne, look, you're coming off of a tremendous run at Arlington Park, leading trainer at Arlington. It's no stranger to leading trainer titles. Talk about what we can look forward to over the next couple of months here from the Wayne Catalano barn.
Well, you know, we had a big run once again at Arlington. You know, we had our 10th training title. Once again, we were fortunate enough to have a lot of owners give us some very nice horses and send them to me for Arlington Park, for the poly track, and for the races. And, you know, racing is great at Arlington, and the track's beautiful. And so I was in the right spot, you know, where people send me horses. And, of course, you know, my record speaks for itself. So we were fortunate enough to get some horses, and we had some great people. And, you know, Fernando, my assistant trainer in Chicago, done a great job. Kelsey, sending the horses from her area and on that little run that we had over there was fabulous. It's not easy to do and to keep that momentum going into Keelan. That's what we're looking forward to do. Hopefully, you know, the track will help us out this year. In the past, it wasn't so kind to us, but I think we should be all right this season. Going into Keelan Racetrack in that meet and maybe getting lucky enough with Stephanie's Kitten and Kiwi 2. And we got a couple other horses that for some bigger races that we're going to shoot to.
All right, Wayne Catalano, he's been our special guest here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. Wayne, I want to thank you for all your time. Very gracious, as always. Can't wait to see you out here at Keeneland this week, and all the best, my friend, with this weekend stakes
thank
races.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on the show anytime, guys.
Great Thanks, stuff, Wayne. Thank you.
Thank you, bud.
Trainer Wayne Catalano, outstanding job here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. And not a whole lot of time left to wrap this one up, so we'll remind you we're back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time with HRN Live. Of course, our call-in show from 6 to 7 tomorrow afternoon, and then back on Friday as well, 3 to 7 Eastern Time. Catch every Breeders' Cup Challenge race with us. Check out HRNLive.com and HorseRacingRadio.net. Good stuff.
Yeah, it was great.
Good
was
hour.
Real interesting to hear him talk about Animal Kingdom. I really enjoyed that.
Good hour. For Lee Delapina, our producer, Jude Feld, I am Mike Penna. We are back with you tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 7 Eastern. Don't miss it here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good night, Barbados.
Listening to the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race, every simulcast, every day.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
The Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, taking the lead, besting the field. The monthly magazine is dedicated to in-depth coverage of Thoroughbred racing's most dynamic region. No other single publication reaches as many owners, breeders, and trainers in this area. Readers say that the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred is their magazine, their voice, and their most important source for information. Join the ranks of top professionals who read the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred every month. They study, consult, rely on, and prefer Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. Subscribe today. Join the club. Go to MidAtlanticTB.com.
Thousands of thoroughbred racing fans from over 50 countries read RacehorseReport.com on a regular basis. RacehorseReport.com offers great stories about racing's top players, both human and equine, Bob Kiekeffer's weekend stakes preview and his Monday racing roundup, weekly spot play selections, and successful betting strategies for racing's biggest days. From a neophyte fan to a hardened horse player, everybody can learn a little something at RacehorseReport.com. And for the best and up-to-the-minute racing information, follow Racehorse Report on Facebook and Twitter.
It's championship season in thoroughbred horse racing, and there's still plenty of time to earn a championship of your own at MyFantasyStable.com, the first real fantasy horse racing game. Gather your friends and create a private league or join a public league and compete against racing fans from all over North America. Draft online or offline and pick your own unique stable of 15 horses, 2 jockeys, and 2 trainers. Use our exclusive rankings from trainer Gary Mandela and yours truly, Jude Feld, to manage your stable from week to week to win the most purse money through November 3rd. Champions will be crowned this fall. Are you one? Get started now at MyFantasyStable.com.
This is HRRN, your home for the 2012 Breeders' Cup World Championships.